We're going to meet Isai Maria Barnwell. She was the baritone voice in Sweet Honey in the Rock, and she was on the music show in that capacity more than once. She left in 2013, and now she is a composer, a freelancer in all sorts of ways, and in particular, she leads workshops and creates vocal communities, and that's why she's in Australia. She's in Western Australia, in fact, in Denmark, for the Denmark Festival of Voices this weekend. It's an ambitious festival that brings together the West Australian Symphony Orchestra, local choirs, and a very strong Indigenous presence. We'll talk to Isai Maria Barnwell in a moment. Let's listen to her most famous song.
I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. You used to rock me in the cradle of your arms. You said you'd hold me till the pains of life were gone. You said you'd comfort me in times like these, and now I need you, now I need you. And you are gone. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. Since you've gone and left me, there's been so little beauty, but I know I saw it clearly through your eyes. Now the world outside is such a cold and bitter place. Here inside I have few things that will console. And when I try to hear your voice above the storms of life, then I remember all the things that I was told. Sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I think on the things that make me feel so wonderful when I was young. I think on the things that made me laugh, made me dance, made me sing. I think on the things that made me grow into a being full of pride. I think on these things, for they are true. I am sitting here wanting memories in the world through my own eyes. I thought that you were gone, but now I know you're with me. You are the voice that whispers all I need to hear. I know a please, a thank you, and a smile will take me far. I know that I am you, and you are me, and we are one. I know that who I am is numbered in each grain of sand. I know that I've been blessed again and over again. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes.
Well, that's a song called Wanting Memories, and that was Sweet Honey in the Rock. And singing in there, and indeed the composer of that song, is my guest on today's music show, Isai Maria Barnwell. Isai, welcome to the music show.
Thank you.
Let's talk about that song, shall we, first, because if any of our listeners go to YouTube, they will find themselves absolutely sort of drowning in versions of that song.
Oh,
not just by Sweet Honey in the Rock, but by college and choirs and high school choirs and community choirs and people beatboxing it. And I don't know whether you've counted how many versions.
I haven't, but I do know it's my biggest hit.
Tell me why you think that might be.
You know, I have no idea. And I really didn't know that it was so popular among the range of groupings that you've mentioned. I know that a lot of choirs have done it, but beyond that, I really hadn't taken notice. So I'm always surprised when people tell me that, you know, they heard so-and-so singing it. So I'm happy.
Yes, and it's very striking, the idea of wanting memories as well, because normally that's not something, you don't normally want memories. Memories are things that you have whether you want them or not.
That's true. But you want the ones that comfort you, and you want the ones that explain what has happened to you. You know, we go through a life experience, and you say, well, why the heck did that happen to me? And it takes years sometimes to understand why something has happened. And so wanting to go back and figure out, why did I have this relationship? Why did I have that experience? What was it that made me ill at that time? Wanting to understand those things and coming to grips with the responses, the answers, I think is very important.
A few years now, I think 6 years since you left Sweet Honey in the Rock,
mm-hmm.
and even though you've hardly been idle in that time, you've been commissioned quite a lot to write pieces for other groups, the King Singers in England, for example, or and a whole array of churches in Minneapolis. I'm assuming that they approach you because they think they know what they're going to get from you, but how do you adapt your own voice as a composer when you're working for these groups that are nothing like, in some cases, Sweet Honey in the Rock?
I do what is given to me, and I mean that in kind of a spiritual sense. People ask for a piece of music, and sometimes they'll tell you a subject, or sometimes they'll tell you the function that they want to include it in, and so you try to address that. But sometimes people just give you complete freedom. And I have no idea how I come to a decision about what the subject should be. I could wake up in the morning and will have been hearing a melody in my head all night long. Or I might be flipping through some pages and I see a text that says, nobody loves you anymore. And for some reason, you know, you start thinking about that all day long and wondering if it's true. And if it's true, why? You know, and obviously I haven't written a song that says that. But when something comes to you like that, you have to wonder why. I mean, I feel like songs are given. I don't feel like I give songs. I feel like songs are given to me as a way of expressing something that maybe a few people need to hear. So I can't even really take ownership because I feel like I'm led to some subjects. I'm led to some lyrics.
And sometimes you're led, yes, sometimes you're led to a melody or a vocal texture, and sometimes it's to some words.
Yes. Lyrics sing themselves to me when they wish to. I feel fortunate about that.
Yes. I do think you should write the Nobody Loves You Anymore song. I think you should take it as a challenge.
You'll be the first to hear it.
Let's talk about building a vocal community, because this is what you've been doing a lot in the United States, and this is what you're in Western Australia to do. What do you mean by a vocal community?
You know, I grew up in a time when everybody sang. We sang in church, we sang in the Girl Scouts, we sang at camp, When I grew up, I realized that occupations had their own songs. And part of my training is in public health, and I actually did some research on the lyrics of songs by coal miners and textile workers, one male, one female occupation, and realized that documented in those songs are the course of various illnesses, the names of various illnesses, etc. And for me, as an African American, I'm also locked into a tradition where songs tell your story. That's what the whole catalog of spirituals is about. And so it feels like songs have always had a purpose and a function. And when I was in Sweet Honey in the Rock, I think that was affirmed for me on a number of different levels. And so I take it seriously and consciously now. It's not just a kind of haphazard thing, but I really take it quite seriously.
And what do you think happened now that you have to build a vocal community? What happened to the vocal communities that once existed, the ones you've described?
Yeah, I think that we have just approached life very differently. Music has changed, and why we create music has changed. So that there were songs, I think I collected a couple thousand songs written by coal miners. Those are men primarily. And then almost a similar number written by women who were textile workers in cotton factories, etc. The songs that come out of slavery are rhythmic and have a function and have documented our whole existence during that period of time. So we are on a new trajectory where the purpose of music has shifted. I don't know that there are occupations now who create new songs to describe what's being done. Things are happening too fast and in too subterranean way with all the technology. We don't really understand what makes things go anymore. And so I think we shift, you know, from documenting who we were in songs, industrially, religiously, etc. We've made some little shifts. That is not to say that we are not documenting what's going on. I have to go to hip hop, I have to go to rap to say, you know, that these forms and other contemporary forms of quote unquote folk or entertaining music still document who we are, but we don't look at it in the same way. We don't look at it as something that we share with other people. We sing together with other people when we get together to affirm that we have a connection through what we believe, what we work at every day, what we are learning, the ways in which we learn it. I think we take all of that for granted. And I feel like every now and then we have to ring a bell and say, no, don't take that for granted, because it's going to die unless we keep feeding it, unless we keep inspiring ourselves.
So, and we lose more than just the music, don't we?
Absolutely. We lose the information. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. You know, I'm a long way from home. Oh, really? Songs have always told us who we are, why we exist in a certain situation, how we perform in that situation. And if we decide that we need to make things different or better, we can do that because we have already the groundwork that's laid out for us in terms of documentation.
You're listening to The Music Show on RN, and my guest today is Isai Maria Barnwell, and she is a singer, a composer, formerly a member of Sweet Honey in the Rock. She was the baritone voice in that group. And she's in Australia, in Western Australia, for the Denmark Festival of Voices. So when you walk into a room with a bunch of people you've never met before, what do you do first to get them singing?
I do a variety of things. Sometimes I just do a pattern of different sounds and ask them to have fun doing those sounds. I make up things on the spot. So I might give something to the low voices. And then I'll put something else, you know, in kind of a tenor place. And then the altos and then sopranos until the whole room is singing. And I think they get so amazed at what happens that they keep doing it. And they have fun. They have a good time. And I move from things like that into things that are more concrete, you know, songs where I can give them the harmonies. Sometimes I'll ask a third of the group to sing one particular spiritual. And then the next third, I'll ask to sing another spiritual along with the first one. And then the third group, I'll give them another song. So in a few minutes, we've actually done several things. We've introduced what spirituals are and what some of them are like. We have taught them the melodies. We have actually shown them that some melodies work together quite well. And from there, we can move into single songs that have different kinds of harmonies and parts. So that's kind of my way of easing into music in community and showing people that they don't even have to know each other, which I hope is not the circumstance when they leave each other, but that they don't have to know each other in preparation for building a sound that brings everything together.
And some of them are non-singers when they start?
Many are.
Yes.
Yeah, they like the idea of singing, but they don't know what it is.
So you're
which I think is really, I think that's kind of sad, you know, and so I want to just move people to a point of comfort, and I try to start with fun and things that don't seem to make sense, but to me they do, and they're the structure that we keep building on in order to get to more complicated things.
And they have to listen, of course, don't they? Because
they do have to listen.
They don't have sheet music in front of them.
Exactly. There is not a piece of music handed out to them. But people don't usually use music, written music, to sing from. That's a thing that we learn when we decide we want to join a choir or when we are trying to learn a hymn from the hymnal. But normally people, the music, written music is not for everybody.
You have composed, I'm assuming with quite a lot of notation, a rather large scale work, which I'd like to ask you about mm-hmm. before we finish. And this is Fortune's Bones. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us the story behind this?
Yes, Fortune was an African who was enslaved in New England. In Rhode Island, I believe. Slavery in New England was quite different from slavery in the southern part of the United States. If you were enslaved in New England, you know, that you didn't grow cotton. You didn't even grow very much of anything. But you served a household. You cleaned, you washed, you cooked, you took care of the children and any of the animals that existed. And so in a sense, that feels fairly civil. But it was still slavery. And so that form of enslavement existed even before it took hold in the South, where people were doing massive other kinds of labor. So Fortune and his wife and four children worked in the household of a physician. And Fortune died. And when he died, the physician decided that in order to help him understand anatomy better, he would dissect Fortune's body. So he did. He dissected Fortune's body, and he was, you know, never really properly buried. He hung in the home, the skeleton hung in the home of this physician for a number of years. And the family, Fortune's family, his children, grew up having to dust, having to walk around the skeleton of their father and husband for all of their growing up. And so we don't really know what happened to his bones. But Marilyn Nelson, who is an award-winning African-American female poet in the United States, was from Connecticut and decided to write a long poem about fortune. And she wrote and published this poem, which is really quite beautiful. And at some point, the two of us got together and I was commissioned to set this poem to music, which I did, for a 200 voice choir, primarily a black choir, an African American choir, because the sound is very different from Caucasian choirs. And I needed to have a kind of texture that mourned fortune throughout the entire piece. So 200 black voices, there were 6 soloists, I believe, and a full orchestra. And I played in orchestras throughout my growing up. I studied violin. My father was a violinist and my teacher. So I had the sound of orchestras in my head. It was not difficult, to my surprise, actually, that I was able to write for every single instrument that was a part of that Fortune's Bones piece. I think the limitation on it is that it needs a certain sound. 200 black voices is an amazing thing. There are places in the score where a breath has to be taken, you know, but you can't necessarily teach someone how to take that kind of breath. Because it's cultural. Sometimes the rhythms are challenging for people who don't live inside of them already. Mm. And so I'm grateful that it's had 5 performances. I would love for it to have more, clearly. But I've also had the experience of a primarily white choir doing it initially, which was disappointing for me because I felt they didn't understand it and I felt like they didn't have the cultural background to get inside of it. And it was performed also in Seattle, Washington, where the choir was a mixed choir. But in its premiere in Washington, D.C., we had 200 black singers, and it was so incredibly powerful.
Well, in that case, I'm sure it will receive more performances. It sounds like it certainly should. Isai, thank you very much indeed for being my guest.
You are very welcome. Thank you.
We'll listen to the end of Fortune's Bones. I am not my body. I am not my bones.
Yeah.
Knowing I am not my body.
Stephen Walters, the baritone, and the Waterbury Symphony Orchestra. And that's the end of Fortune's Bones, the manumission project composed by Isai Maria Barnwell. That was a performance from the Paramount Theatre, Seattle.